The nearly 500-page federal tax bill is now law. But what does it mean to you? Will it help or will it hurt your checkbook? When will you see a difference in your paycheck? And how much will it change your tax return next year? What do you want to know about the new tax laws? Join us as we talk taxes on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
This is Larry Pursley. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. We're going to talk taxes today, and we have two guests joining me in the Anchorage studio. We have Evelina Kerr, an Anchorage tax accountant with Balanced CPAs. Thanks for coming in. And from Juneau, we have George Elgee, also a tax accountant with the firm Elgee, Rehfeld, and Mertz. Thank you. I'm going to start with an easy question. At least I think it's easy. And I'll start with Evelina. Will people see any changes when they prepare this year's tax returns for last year's income?
No, they shouldn't see any changes. All the changes are effective for the 2018 tax year.
So as I prepare my taxes for last year, this is not going to affect me at all. So, George, let me ask you then, when will workers who are employed as opposed to self-employed or contract or retired, when will workers see a change in their paycheck withholding?
Well, those tables are out right now. They just came out this week, and you can actually there's a W-4 form you fill out to ask your employer to withhold taxes and configure your exemptions and stuff. That form won't come out until mid-February or something. You do not have to fill out a new W-4. You can, but that's all taken care of for you based on this year's information. So they should see an effect on this very first the payroll in January if they get paid at the end of the month. I did have one comment in the last section. There is one significant change in 2017 that is for businesses, okay, not individuals, but there's an unlimited write-off for assets bought after September 28th. So if you bought $1 million piece of equipment in October, you get to write the whole thing off in 2017.
So if I'm a business owner and I made a purchase the last quarter of 2017, rather than having to depreciate it and take that deduction over 5 years or 7 years or whatever it is, I can write the whole purchase off on my tax return that I'm going to be doing now.
That's correct.
And that's a big benefit.
It's huge for people in business. I mean, they don't have to, it could be if you were in a flight service and you bought a $2 million aircraft, you can decide whether you wanted to write it off or not. So big difference from prior years.
My memory is the federal government has done this before. I want to say 25, 30 years ago, there was a program where you could make business equipment purchase, write the whole thing off at once.
Well, there's always been Section 179, which you can write off. And this year they increased Section 179 from $500,000 to $1 million. But this is a different thing. It's called bonus depreciation. And it is for new or used equipment, which is unusual because it used to be just for new equipment. So this is a fairly significant change for the business community.
And the idea, I guess, would be to get businesses to spend money. That's great for the economy, good for workers who are making that equipment or selling it.
That's the general idea. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Evelina, let me ask you, in terms of the withholding, are you getting a lot of calls from your clients asking about withholding tables and how to implement the new withholding and whether you need new W-4s? Is that a big question out there?
We haven't gotten a lot of questions about that. We've gotten more questions about what their 2018 taxes are going to look like. Because most people, not a lot of people calculate their payroll manually anymore. So they'll use a software, and most of the softwares will update those tables. And so they just kind of depend on the software, whether that's a good idea or bad idea.
This is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about taxes today. The call-in number is 1-800-478-8255. Calling from Anchorage, it's 550-8422. George, let me ask you, you mentioned you don't have to do a new W-4, but I assume there will be some individuals who, because of how the tax law changes affect them, they may want to do a new W-4 to make sure they don't over or under withhold.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. In fact, the IRS came out yesterday with it says employers can use W-4s already on file, although the Revenue Service will issue revised W-4 forms that take into account the changes in the new tax law. Employees won't be required to submit an updated form for their employers this year, so amounts withheld from paychecks. But if you want to be accurate, you would. There's a lot of moving pieces on that thing, though, so it's going to be you're almost going to have to understand the new tax law in order to fill out your W-4 to make it, more accurate. Because, whether you itemize deductions, you have standard deduction, these things all change significantly. So,
could find yourself, if you underwithhold, owing money at the end of the year, or giving an interest-free loan to the government, overwithholding and getting a refund back, which a lot of people do prefer, right?
Most people, it goes against logic, but most people would prefer to get a refund. They just like it, interest-free money to the government, and some people are just, diabolically opposed to letting the government have their money. So, yeah, but most people would prefer a small refund than to have to write a check at the end of the year.
Right, so nice post-holiday bonus.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Feels good,
Evelina, let me ask you, will most working Alaskans, when the new tables go into effect, see an increase in their take-home pay under these changes?
I think it really depends on their situation. It also depends on if they change their W-4. For somebody who was single taking the standard deduction, they'll probably see more take-home pay. Somebody who's married, maybe one child with standard deduction, probably see an increase in take-home pay. But there's some people will actually see, basically, maybe if they adjust their W-4 to match what their taxes should be, they actually might see a reduced take-home pay.
Is it going to, would it be accurate to say if you make a lot more, you'll see less withholding, you'll get more of a tax cut?
Yeah, you definitely get more of a tax cut at the higher rates, but a lot of it, but those tax cuts don't amount to nearly as much. So somebody who's making a lot, a small change in their withholding is not going to, they're not going to notice it, right? So, although they'll make the total tax difference from tax cuts isn't as much as the changes in itemized deductions and standard deductions and things like that. So, I think people who make a lot might not notice much of the difference from paycheck to paycheck. So,
okay. This is Talk of Alaska. The call-in number is 1-800-478-8255 or in Anchorage 550-8422. George, let me ask you, and then I'll ask Evelina, what do you think are the biggest changes that individuals will notice in the 2018 tax year that we're in now?
Well, the first thing is there is a drop in every single tax bracket. Well, with the exception of one.
Yeah.
there's one tax bracket that isn't, for whatever reason. And then, but that'll be the first thing. Some of them are very small, 2%, and things like that. They'll see some change. The second one would be the fact that the standard deduction is basically doubled for everyone. A married couple, it goes from $12,600 to $24,000. So not exactly a double, but almost. Then the other one is the dependency. We used to get a $4,000 deduction for each dependent, and that's gone away and it's replaced with a credit for children of up to $2,000. So that's a big one. But, and then there's other things like casualty losses now are no longer deductible unless you live in a disaster area, a declared federal disaster area.
Casualty losses being uninsured.
If you're like, well, a lot of airplanes are, privately owned airplanes are not insured for the body, you know, just liability. So if you lost one of those, you'd be out. Okay.
Because you used to be able to deduct that loss, and now it's not allowed. Okay.
Yeah. And that can be a pretty big item. You know, since a lot of people have airplanes in Alaska, that could be a significant thing. The other one is elimination of miscellaneous itemized deductions. That's all that, you know, people like tax preparation fees, you know. But the big one would be investor fees, people that pay for investment advice. They no longer get that. But all unreimbursed employee expenses, they're gone. They're all gone. Another one is moving expenses. They're gone now. So,
well, they really did cut out a lot. I didn't realize that. So if I paid an advisor to tell me how to make more money on my investments, I could deduct the investment advice even if it turned out to be bad and I lost money?
Absolutely.
Do I get to double the deduction if it was bad advice?
No, you don't. But you get to take a loss on the sale of those stocks.
Oh, I should be happy.
Yeah, so there you go, if the bad advice. But no, you know, for a lot of us, it's irrelevant, you know. But if you were, you know, if you're, they charge 1%, right? Or usually 1% to 1.5% to manage an account. So that's a very significant change that, you know, people of wealth are going to see. I mean, some of this stuff nailed people with a lot of money. They're losing expenses. But the one that kind of bothers me a little bit is the moving expenses. You know, the United States for as long as I've been around, and is always encouraged workers to move to the jobs, you know, and then they actually benefited by being able to write off their airplane fares and ferry tickets and gasoline and all that to move to a new location, to move to the job. And that's gone now. And I don't know what their that's a giant philosophical change for the U.S., I think. So and there's lots of, you know, things like that. It's interesting. You know?
It is. And as I think about it, the last couple of years, we've seen more people leave Alaska than move here. And those are moving expenses for jobs. Evelina, let me ask you, can you think of some other big, significant, or just plain interesting changes in the tax laws?
I think there's definitely some interesting ones, but if we're talking about individuals at this point, I agree with George, like the removing of the dependency exemptions, the doubling of the standard deduction, and the 2% miscellaneous itemized. So most of my clients that I've quoted that their taxes are going to go up have been people who had the 2% itemized deductions, so investor fees and things like that. So it might be an opportunity for investors to rethink about how they bill. And I don't know a lot about that side of how they make that decision, but if I do know that if they bill per transaction, my understanding is it goes into the basically your gain or loss on sale, which means you would be able to deduct it as part of that calculation instead of as an itemized deduction.
So workaround might be to assess that fee for my transaction becomes the cost of making the investment as opposed to just the advisory fee.
Yeah, but I am not an investment advisor, so
right.
I have no idea what the ramifications
should,
for that.
I should make clear nobody should make investments based on anything we say today or assume that make tax decisions. Well, let me ask in sort of that same vein of changes in deductions. There's been a lot of talk in the national press about people accelerating, bulking up their charitable donations in 2017 because they wouldn't or might not be able to deduct them in 2018. Evelina, did you see a lot of that, hear a lot of that, people saying, I better make my donations now?
Yeah, so we recommended it to clients. I recommended it to friends because the deduction is going to be better for them in 2017. One, because of the lower tax brackets in 2018, but then also because they are less likely statistically to itemize in 2018, depending on where they fell. So the hope is that these charities will not be hurt in 2018 if people are deducting what they would have deducted in 2018 and 2017.
But I guess if the charity got the money in December of 2017 rather than 18, it's the same to them. The concern would be in the years going forward.
Yeah.
I guess, George, have you heard much talk in the industry where people are worried that maybe overall charitable donations will suffer because of people can't deduct as much?
Well, yes, I've heard the argument on it, and there are a couple of solutions that I've paid attention to, too. One of the things is, yes, you've doubled the standard deduction, so you know, it was about 30% of the people itemized, and now it's going to drop down to, who knows, 5%, 10%? We don't know for sure exactly. There's guesses out there. I've looked it up. But one of the things that people could do, like on charitables, you could do what they call a donor advised fund, and this is where you come in and let's just say you do have some wealth. You come in and you say, well, I'm going to set up a $100,000 donor advised fund in 2018. Well, you get a deduction for $100,000. And that donor advised fund is you get to give away your money in the future years. You get to so you could still go back and you put $100,000 in there because you know you're going to be doing deductions for the next 10 years. Well, you get that one in 2018. And then as the donor advised money makes money, or you can even spend down the principal, you can give that money to your favorite charities. So there are ways, again, you have to have money. But again, most people do not itemize their deductions, and it's going to be a lot less after this.
So that was certainly one complaint by some groups of the tax reform, tax overhaul, tax cut legislation, whatever the Democrats or Republicans or present wanted to call it, that people with money, they'll figure out a way to do okay. Evelina, without divulging particular clients, do you hear much grumbling on that?
Yeah, obviously it depends on the client. My high net worth clients or my high income clients, they're happy, especially my self-employed clients. They're happy they're getting a lot of deductions and things like that. So, but I do have a lot of retired clients, and quite a few of them that I've quoted have all seen an increase, based on estimates, an increase in their taxes.
So even though Congress passed it, the president signed it into law, the debate over whether it was good, bad, fair, that debate's continuing.
Definitely. And even some of my high net worth clients will say, depending on their persuasion kind of politically, they'll say, you know, oh, this is really good for me, but I still don't like it, you know.
But that's great. You can argue taxes until you're dead, right?
Yeah. My office is next to a cemetery.
Your office is next to a cemetery?
Yes, we make jokes about death and taxes, right?
Did you plan it that way?
I didn't.
Do you co-advertise? I mean, you could save some money there.
Death and taxes, there you go.
I kind of like that, next to a cemetery. I'm going to have to think about that one. George, a lot of the national attention has been focused on the new limit for deductibility of state and local taxes, sales, income, property. But without a state sales tax, without a state income tax, is that going to come into play that much for Alaskans?
Not as much as it will for the East Coast and West Coast states. That's for sure.
High tax states.
Yeah, they've got income tax or high sales taxes and stuff like that. And yeah, that basically, for all intents and purposes, we've got a property tax and a small sales tax for certain locations. But you know, like in Juneau, $10,000, you have to have an over a $900,000 home to hit that level. I think I looked at Anchorage, it was about $680 for you people that live there based on your mill rate. Since you don't have a sales tax like we do, so I don't think Alaskans are going to be hit by that one, but it's just the overall standard deduction eliminates a lot of people from even thinking about itemizing deductions. So it's and then the one thing I noticed at the very end of the year, everybody was telling pay your taxes early and all that. Well, there's one thing that the federal government set up in 1969. It was called the alternative minimum tax. And that was set up for 155 people at the time, because those people didn't pay any tax. And Congress said, that's just not fair. So they put that in place and said, hey, we're going to make you pay at least a minimum tax, alternative minimum tax. So they have another thing. Well, that thing grew. Last year, there was 5 million people. So it went from 155 to 5 million people. And one of the changes to that, it was still in effect in 2017, is to disallow taxes as a deduction. And so all these people that were prepaying their taxes probably will trigger alternative minimum tax when they go to file their return for 2017. But in 2018, they have modified the alternative minimum tax. So now it's going to drop down to from 5 million to 200,000. So most people, again, will not be subject to it. But it's interesting that people weren't thinking about the alternative minimum tax when they were out there advocating for people to pay additional property tax, because you can't get out of it.
And not only that, but at least in Anchorage, and I can't speak for the rest of the state, but I've heard it's the same everywhere in Alaska, is that they don't assess the property taxes until 2018. And the IRS even put out a bulletin making it incredibly clear that you can't prepay your property taxes if they haven't been assessed. And so for people who, in Anchorage at least, property taxes are assessed in, I think it's January 2018, and so they don't have a liability, they can't actually deduct it even if they did prepay it. So I think it won't affect people even in that way. And unfortunately, from a tax preparer standpoint, I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of clients who say, this is how much I paid in property taxes, and I'm going to have to either check or ask them, like, well, is that all for taxes that were actually assessed?
So people who thought they were going to outsmart the system and wrote a big check to the municipality of Anchorage to prepay taxes, you're going to have to tell them that was a nice gift from you to the cash flow of Anchorage,
but it's
not going to do you any good. This is Talk of Alaska, 1-800-478-8255, and it's 550-8422 in Anchorage. We have Harry from Anchorage on the phone with a question about rental property income.
Hi there, Larry.
Hi.
So I have a number of rental properties, and I have been just taking that as regular income and using my deductions for the maintenance and equipment and all to reduce that income. Now I hear that on a pass through business that you don't have to claim 20% of the value of that income. So is this change going to make it more conducive to set my rental properties up as a separate business, or should I continue to just take it as regular income?
Well, maybe we'll ask Evelina first and then George if he has anything to add.
So it doesn't have to be just a pass-through. That deduction also applies to sole proprietors. And from my research, I haven't, and maybe George can say if he's found something different. It hasn't been totally clear whether that'll apply to rentals that aren't for non-real estate professionals. But for businesses, for people who have a small business and they may be a sole proprietor, it's not going to make it. They're still going to get that same deduction. There's limits, obviously. It's a very complex deduction, but they're going to get that same deduction whether they're a pass-through entity or whether they're a sole proprietor. But maybe George has been able to find somewhere that clarified whether it applies to just rental properties where they're not a real estate professional. They just have some rental properties.
Yeah, it applies to everybody that has a rental property, and each rental property is looked at separately. But where the 20% thing is on real estate. It takes the unadjusted basis of the property you own. Let's just say, for ease of math, you own a $1 million piece of property. You would be limited to $25,000, okay, 2.5% of the value of the undepreciated asset. That's the deduction you get. So if the underlying asset, it's not just 20%, it's the lesser of those two numbers. So if you have a $300,000 or $500,000 property, it'd be $13,000 or 20% of your bottom line, whatever's less. So go ahead.
But those limits only apply if you are over the, from my understanding, if you're over the income limits, so $157,500 for single and $314,000 for married. If you're under those limits, you can, from what I've read, you can basically just take the 20% either way.
Yeah,
but then
if you
are over that for the higher income people, you do have to start looking at those limits like you're talking about.
Yeah. No, we have a flow chart that goes down exactly like what you said, Evelina.
It's very complicated.
You go down and say yes here, no there, go there. And you can take 20% at this level. If you don't meet that level, then you have to go down and you take 2.5% of the unadjusted basis. And it just gets, which is, I'm actually very happy that they made this so complex because my job security now is unbelievable.
Okay, so I got to say, as we're sitting here talking about limits and alternative minimum tax and unadjusted basis, as someone who pays to have his tax returns done and has done so for years. I thought this whole thing was supposed to make it simpler. I sit here listening to you, and both of you, doesn't seem like it got any simpler. Evelina, is this simpler?
I think the part that's simpler are, if you think about people who were itemizing before, now they take the standard deduction. They don't have to worry about exemptions. So how many kids do I have? Do they qualify? And are they my dependent or are they their own or somebody else's? So that part will be simpler. Mm-hmm. People who have a W-2, a PFD, and then, you know, just their standard deduction, they can do a one-page return. It'll be quick. But businesses have gotten, in my opinion, even more complex. So that's where really we're seeing more complexity, but it definitely, either way, still not a postcard for anybody.
So George, it sounds like if you have one job, you have a W-2, you don't own a lot of rental property, you don't have a lot of investments, maybe it is simpler. You get a bigger standard, deduction. You don't have to worry about itemizing, but if you've got assets, multiple incomes, your own businesses, it's no simpler, is it?
No, not at all. It's there's some complexity to this, and lots of new rules. Some of them, you know, it's just like not every tax law applies to everybody. Thank God, because you've got, you know, 25,000 pages of tax code. So you're sitting there going, okay, which ones apply to me? Not very many to any particular individual, no matter who you are. So if you're into the rental property, you've got other things called passive losses, which is if you can't take a loss, you know, if you make more than $150,000 and they're suspended and things like that. Those are still on the books. Now you've got this new thing that says, oh, if you make money on them, we'll give you a deduction on that. It's unbelievable. And some of the game, there's got to be a lot of gaming of the system that's what they hire us for, is to figure out how we can maximize the deductions for people.
But, and so we should qualify lawful gaming.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, yes, of course. I mean, but that's
of course.
But again, some of these things are based on, like, pass-through entities. We have income and it's based on W-2 income or earned income, and the rest of the money is, it gets this break. Well, you now know that people are going to be going, oh, I can live on a lot less W-2, and then I get a break on my other income. Okay. So there's going to be some stuff going on that is going to make it. I don't know what the IRS is going to do with their regs. That's what we're waiting for next.
Right, more details.
Yeah.
And speaking of breaks, before we go to one, we have Allie from Chickaloon has a question about implications for health insurance.
Hi. I was wondering how the new tax bill is going to affect health insurance, and specifically, as I understand right now, with the system, it's interesting because if you look at the threshold for Medicaid, say, is about $26,000 a year. You know, it's actually monthly, but that's about what it is, so less than that. And that is figured pre-taxes. Now, if you are purchasing insurance on the marketplace, that's post-taxes, and that's around $29,000. This is just for a couple, no kids. So there's actually a gap for people who can't even get health insurance if you're self-employed currently. And I'm wondering, with that doubling of the standard deduction to $24,000, if that's going to increase that gap of not being able to even get health insurance. So anything related to that question.
And when you talk about not getting health insurance, you're talking about not getting health insurance through the government marketplace.
Sure. So if you're self-employed, right, there aren't many other options.
Well, let me ask Evelina, George, do either of you have that's beyond my knowledge, so that's why I'm looking at you two saying, gee, you guys.
Larry, the only thing that passed and that was changed in the law is you're not required, starting, you know, next year, you're not required. I think it's 2019.
But, yeah. There's still penalty for 2019.
Yeah, so this year you're still required to buy insurance, but starting in 2019, you do not have to buy insurance because they're not going to, the penalty's gone for not buying insurance. That's the only thing that changed in the law. Now, I am not as familiar with the Medicaid stuff as I'm just not familiar with the insurance market that way, unfortunately.
Okay, Evelina, let me ask you. So that the repeal of the penalty that was in this tax bill, the Affordable Health Care Act, it doesn't take effect till 2019. So in 2018, if I don't have insurance through my employer, private pay, marketplace, I still have to pay the penalty.
Yes, that penalty is still in effect for 2018. So when you do your taxes in April 2019, you will still have a penalty if you didn't have health insurance this year.
And has that penalty been increasing each year?
It was increasing. I think it was more that they had a high penalty and then they kind of gave a break throughout the years leading up to it. I haven't looked at what the rates are for the next year, so I'm not sure what 2018's penalties are.
Yeah, I thought it was about 3%, but I don't remember now. Yeah.
Okay. This is Talk of Alaska. The call-in number is 800-478-8255 from Anchorage 550-8422. Talk of Alaska will continue.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Federal Subsistence Board is accepting applications through February 2nd to fill seats on the 10 Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Councils meet at least twice a year and provide critical advice to the board on subsistence management issues. Individuals may apply or nominate someone for membership. More at doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456. This message is sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
This is Larry Pursley, Talk of Alaska, 1-800-478-8255, 550-8422. We're talking taxes today with George Elgee from Juneau, Elgee Rayfeld Mertz, and Evelina Kerr, Balanced CPAs, tax accounting firm in Anchorage. We have an email question from Pam, who's asking about withdrawals from your traditional IRA, your individual retirement account, whether that's going to be taxed any differently under the changes, ordinary income, capital gain. George, do you have any answers? Were there any changes in how I'm going to pay taxes when I take money out of my IRA?
No, there's no changes to that. The only change to the IRA thing was if you converted a regular traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, you used to have the ability that if the market went down or you chose poorly, you could recharacterize that. And that is now no longer available. So that's the only significant change, I think. I don't know. Evelina, what about it?
Yeah, I haven't heard any changes with IRAs other than what you were talking about. So,
how many people choose poorly?
A lot.
Yeah. Now,
this year, I doubt there will be, though, because the market went stupid this year. So you would really have to be a bad guesser.
I think the technical term, George, is the market went up.
Well,
whether that was based on stupid economic assumptions or something else.
I mean, but you would have to really be a real loser to have lost this year. I think so. Anyway.
Yeah, so not trying to insult those people.
I just insulted half my clients. Sorry.
That's suggesting that half your clients are stupid and lost money in the market.
Ooh, ouch.
So we have another email question from Sharon, who wanted to know, are charitable donations still deductible? And my understanding, Evelina, is, well, they're deductible, but there are more limitations than there used to be, so a lot of people are just not going to be able to deduct them.
Actually, what's interesting is the limitation on charitable contributions actually went up. So it used to be, and very few people meet this, but it used to be that if you gave more than 50% of your income to charity, you were limited. You couldn't deduct it. And they've increased that to 60%.
You couldn't deduct it that year. You would have to carry it forward.
Okay. Yes, sorry. So you could carry it forward. Now they've increased that limit to 60%. So if you're given 60% of your annual income to charity before, you could carry it forward 10. Now you can deduct that up to 60%. But the complication is that the reason we talk about charitable contributions, people not being able to deduct them, is not because they're not deductible. It's because more people are going to take the standard deduction. So before, if I was itemizing, a lot of people, if you own a home, you're paying mortgage interest, you're itemizing. They could then take a charitable contribution, add it to their mortgage interest, property taxes, things like that. And now less people are going to be itemizing, and so they're just going to take the same deduction whether they contribute, you know, $5,000 to charity or $2,000 to charity or whatever it is.
Which has some charities worry that if more people itemize cannot deduct the charitable contribution, that'll show up on the charity's bottom lines.
Yeah, a lot of my nonprofit clients have been pretty concerned about it. And we'll just have to see, because the argument on the flip side is that if people have more money to spend because they're paying less taxes, maybe they'll give more.
Feel more benevolent.
And I think it depends on the charity. I think, you know, there are charities that people are passionate about and they're going to give no matter what. But I do think there are definitely charities where somebody calls you and says, oh, do you want to donate to this? And you think, oh, you know, it sounds okay. You know, it's a tax deduction anyways. I'll go ahead and do it. And those are the ones that may suffer a little bit. But like George said earlier, we'll just have to see how it shakes out, because it's hard to tell now.
Okay. George, we have an email question from Leo in Petersburg, wants to know if anything in the tax law specifically will affect government retirees any differently than anyone else?
No.
Okay.
That's an easy question.
I like those easy ones.
Yeah.
George, are you getting much worry or hearing much worry from your nonprofit clients who are very nervous watching the checks that may or may not come in 2018?
You know, I haven't heard anybody. I mean, they're always concerned. I mean, nonprofits are always looking for money, right? I mean, they're always asking.
And right, because they need the money.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know that, you know, again, like I said, only 30% of the people could itemize before. So they were the only ones that really benefited from they absolutely are the only ones that benefited from being able to deduct charitable contributions. If you don't itemize, you don't get it. So I don't know. Yes, less of those people are going to itemize, but I think our society gives quite a bit, even whether it's deductible. Yeah, sure, we say it's deductible, but I think they'll give. I'm confident people will give.
Yeah, we certainly hope so, because there's no question Alaska has a lot of nonprofits, many of which can use funds. Let's move from charitables to the pass-through, and Harry from Anchorage raised that issue when he asked about rental property. There was a lot of national coverage on pass-throughs, LLCs, S-corporations, people who live this stuff know right away. Limited liability companies, an LLC, and an S-corp is a not necessarily smaller corporation, but a corporation that is not publicly traded. You can't find the shares on the New York Stock Exchange. Let me ask both of you, starting with Evelina. Alaska has a large proportion of people who are self-employed, small businesses. This LLC, S-corp, small pass-throughs is going to be a big deal in Alaska, isn't it?
Yeah, and one small correction is just that you can have a non-S corporation, a C corporation that also isn't publicly traded. It just has to do with a C corporation pays its own tax, and an S corporation, the tax is paid by the owners.
Which is where the idea of pass-through comes. So an S corp, the business earns money instead of paying a corporate tax. Whatever it earns, it distributes to its shareholders, and they pay tax on it.
Exactly. And so with S-corporations and partnerships, LLCs, and even sole proprietors, as I said earlier, everything that I read in the new tax reform that applied to pass-through entities also applied to sole proprietors. So you don't have to rush out and become a separate entity or something like that. But for them, I think a lot of them, it's going to be good. My one concern with businesses is that what you could do before is, let's say I have a job, I'm an employee, and I want to start a small business. So what I would do is I would take my money I'm earning from my job, and I would fund my business, right? Because we all hear that most businesses have losses for the first couple years, take some time. So it used to be I'd have losses, and I'd offset those losses from my business against my wages, against my other income that I already had. So that I was paying less tax, so I could, again, put more money into this business. one of the changes in the tax reform is that you can't, for if you have a net business loss, if you add all your businesses together and there's a loss, you can no longer deduct that against your ordinary income. You have to carry it forward. Your other, or your, not ordinary, but other income like wages.
So I can't deduct my business loss against my day job.
Exactly. And so I think that's going to make it a little bit harder for new small businesses to get started.
People who have a second business on the side, mm-hmm. that's going to lose money in the first couple years.
Exactly. Because I have a lot of clients who they struggle financially when they're starting their business because all their money goes to their new business. So I'm a little bit concerned about how that'll affect new small businesses. But small businesses that are established, they'll see, especially like I said, under those income limits, they'll see a good deduction. And then over those income limits, still a lot of them will see a good deduction if they have assets or if they have wages that they pay to people.
So, George, can you explain in simplistic terms for people like myself and others, how this is going to work now for these pass-through entities, proprietorships, LLCs, S-Corps? The law that Congress passed says a portion of your income isn't taxable, and then you pay a different tax rate on the rest, but some businesses are treated different than others, right?
Yes, Larry.
Then I got it. Great.
Yeah, well,
okay,
it.
We can move on to something.
We can move on to the next subject. Now, well, let's put it, the easiest one is actually the sole proprietor because they get 20%, like let's use the example of $100,000. $20,000 of that would not be subject to tax, okay? That's they just take $20,000 and remove it from your taxable income, and that
cool.
And then that's it. It's easy, okay. And especially if you're not, $100,000 is nice because when you get into like Evelina was talking about, once you get above 315 and all the way to 415, if you're in a service business like our business, we don't get it.
We don't.
Okay, we don't get any.
So you guys don't get to.
No,
get 20% tax free.
No,
not over those limits.
We're professionals, and basically the way they said it. Even bookkeepers, it doesn't matter if it's your professional service you're providing. But just a segue off that, the thing that really torques me a little bit is the engineers and the architects aren't under that. So their lobbying group was a lot better than the doctors and the attorneys.
Engineers and architects can get first 20% tax free.
From everything, yeah. Yeah.
But
they don't have any limits.
Can't.
Yeah. Accountants, doctors, attorneys, it's ridiculous.
Well, because I guess engineers and architects build things. You
guys
don't build things.
I guess not. We're not worthy. Anyway, we're definitely not worthy.
Okay.
But when you get into it, so obviously a small retail store would be a classic. They are going to benefit from this. But professional, personal service businesses are going to be subject to limitations. So that's the main thing that you've got there. And there's a whole bunch, because once you go above a certain level, then you start looking at a percentage of your W-2s paid and your unadjusted basis of assets and a whole bunch of other limitations. But the basic bottom line, if you just thought about it, they're saying, hey, 20% of your bottom line is a deduction. And that's just, if everything was perfect and it doesn't matter where it gets complicated then is for LLCs, partnerships, and S corporations, it's 20% of the bottom line, but that is after you pay yourself a reasonable compensation. And the same thing in partnerships, guaranteed payments. And that's why sole proprietorships are so good, because you don't pay yourself anything. You just get 20% of your bottom line. And so anyway, there's going to be some complications there. And like I said before, I think we're going to be, there's going to be some push to either reduce compensation so you have more of that bottom line that you get that 20% deduction on. So
that gets to the statement you made earlier about legal gaming
working
the system.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we have Stacy from Sitka who has a fisheries tax question, which is certainly a big issue in Alaska. Stacy?
Mm-hmm. Hello?
Hello. Stacy, are you there?
Hi, Larry. Yeah, this is Stacy from Sitka. I was wondering about fishermen who are sole proprietors. It sounded like from your conversation that it would be an advantage to remain a sole proprietorship and not form an LLC to take advantage of the 20% on the pass-through income.
Evelina.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how much your income is, because as we talked about, if for single $157,500 or married $315,000, if you're under those limits, then yeah, if you're a sole proprietor, you don't have to worry about these reasonable compensation items, and you can just deduct that 20%. But if you're over those limits, it starts to be based on W-2 wages paid, which fishermen don't pay W-2 wages. They pay crew shares in a form of 1099 income, or 2% of your adjusted or your unadjusted basis. So if your boat is within the last 10 years, then great, you're probably going to be fine with limits depending on the size, cost of the boat. But if your boat's older than 10 years, if you have an older boat, it no longer counts in this, basically that calculation. And so so it just depends on the situation. But for a lot of fishermen, it's going to be easier and just make more sense to stay as a sole proprietor. But for entities that have switched to a different type of entity, I don't know that there should be a rush at this point to go switch back to sole proprietor. You'd have to look at each situation because it really does depend.
Okay, George, any advice, words of wisdom for either fishing crew members or fishing boat owners?
Well, the boat owners. I mean, again, as Evelina said, anybody under 315 is going to be pretty much vanilla. They get 20% of the bottom line. If you start going above that, and most of our fishermen are below that level. I mean, we've got some big seiners that get above it, but not most of them. You don't want to switching from once you get into a corporation, you're pretty much stuck. We always call them crab pots of entities because they're easy to get into, but they're impossible to get out of. Because if you tried to remove your boat from an S corporation, you're going to pay tax on it. So you can't do that. So if you make the decision to move into a corporation, and don't, okay, that's my first question. Don't do that. And really talk to you need to talk to your tax professional before you ever make a move on that. Do not do this on your own or talking to your buddies or something. Okay.
Okay. Good advice. This is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about taxes today.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The University of Alaska's founders knew that to build a great state, we would need a great university. Today, UA offers more than 400 degrees and certificates with campuses from Kotzebue to Ketchikan. They are leaders in Arctic and Alaska research and dedicated to direct hands-on teaching, whether online, in the classroom, or in the field. Greatness awaits you. See how the University of Alaska can help you achieve at alaska.edu/start here. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
This is Larry Pursley, Talk of Alaska. We're talking about taxes today, and here's a question we got online. Alimony, and Evelina, you and I had talked about this. Under current federal law, alimony payments are deductible, but then the recipient has to pay tax on that, correct? But that is changing under this bill?
That is changing for new divorces, and I think the date, I don't have it off the top of my head, but I think the date is for new divorces in 2019. And so if you get divorced this year, you're still going to be under the old law.
Still deductible, thing. Still income.
Yep. But any divorces starting 2019 and going forward, you're going to have to, the person paying alimony gets no deduction. The person receiving alimony has no income to include.
And for some people who are, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. And I think that's the reason that they used to have it that way was that it was really beneficial to people. Usually people who are in the lower income don't pay alimony to somebody in a higher income. That doesn't happen.
Right. Richer people. Are
exactly.
Paying. Yeah.
So it shifts income from a higher tax bracket to a lower tax bracket by doing that. So now it's all that income is going to be taxed. I think this was one of the ways to try to keep this bill less expensive, basically. It's one of the ways they could cut for giving all the other
to
tax
reduce
cuts.
The cost.
Exactly.
We have Bill from Petersburg online who has a question about the phase out for individual tax cuts. Bill?
Yes, just quickly. I understand the tax laws and the cuts are permanent for corporations, but for individuals, they'll be phased out over time and they're considered temporary. So at what point do they start to phase out? And at what point, I understand that Congress can only authorize these things for 10 years under their rules there. So I guess the question is when do we start the debate on extending these tax cuts?
Well, this is America. We probably started the debate yesterday. But, George, why don't you give us the timeline on what phases out and when?
Well, the individual provisions all sunset on December 31st, 2025.
Will you be retired by then?
God, I hope so, Larry. I don't want another tax law coming at me. I'm like, yeah.
So the corporate change is permanent. The individuals, they all phase out.
Right. Yeah. That was to meet, you know, like he said, there's to meet the 1.5 trillion whatever deficit spending they were, you know, contemplating on this, and they couldn't go past that. So.
Yeah, know. Evelina, you have something to add? It looks like.
No. Yeah. That sounds about right.
Yeah, I think the expectation among some supporters in Congress is, oh, don't worry about the phase out. We'll have to debate it and we'll keep extending it because politically we won't want to see an increase in individual tax rates. But that debate is.
And that's true. That happens every year to poor tax preparers. We're sitting there on, you know, December 15th and they're debating whether they're going to extend Section 179 for assets or bonus depreciation. And we're waiting and then they make a decision and then we're calling all our clients. Okay, you can buy stuff and deduct it. So that happens very regularly. It's kind of part of our life now. Same thing with this. I was doing some tax planning with clients and this was still going on, and there was some things that weren't clear yet or had changed, and then they came out with this just at the very end of the year.
And you've read the entire bill.
I read it on a plane.
Because you didn't want to watch a movie?
Yeah. Well, I needed to know it, you know, and it is definitely interesting. There's some funny things in there, and then, but then also some good stuff for tax planning purposes.
Funny things. Funny in terms of odd, not funny in terms of you were started laughing on the plane.
Well, I definitely chuckled. There's some deductions for like fruit trees, you know, just some random, I think brewing companies, there's some specific rules to it. Just some kind of random things in there that feel kind of...
Random is benevolent. You could also say effective lobbying.
Yeah.
George, we have a question online or an email from someone who says, he has a duplex, lives in one unit, rents the other unit out. That in the past he's been able to take depreciation and deduct half of the building's expenses from the rental income and ends up losing money on the rental. Is he still going to be able to deduct this loss?
Or is that, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, no, he'll be able to deduct it.
If he was able to before, yeah, you should be able to.
Yeah. Okay. No, he's if he was able to do it, yeah. I mean, if you're under 150, usually you can take up to $25,000 of rental loss. So, that hasn't changed. No.
Okay. We have David on the phone from Sitka, who I'm not sure you have a question, David, or a point you want to make.
Oh, just I question a lot these days, but just basically a comment.
Okay.
There was no tax act, there was no tax bill passed because it was a budget reformation thing. That's how they were able not to have to pass it with a majority in 60 senators and the equivalent majority in the House. So it's not a legitimate bill. And my other thing was that Arctic National Wildlife being included in it. And old Gwich'in told me once never to refer to it as ANWR because it sounds like an oil company. There is no A in ANWR. If people knew it was Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, you know, maybe it wouldn't have been given up so easily. I am totally disgusted with all Republicans. I will do well for 5 years or so, whatever, till 2025 on this bill. Every penny I get extra will be sent to the resist movement.
Oh,
and
well,
I would like to add that everybody should go to the Women's March this weekend. There's nothing controversial about a Women's March.
Okay. Thanks, David. Let me ask a question, Evelina. This is Alaska-specific. Kids get permanent fund dividends. It's unearned income. Does anything in this legislation change how minors or parents doing tax returns for their minors, how that's got to be reported and paid?
The There's some things that aren't clear yet, because what happens with these kinds of things is the Congress writes what the rules are going to be, but how the IRS implements them is still kind of up to the IRS. The one change was that kids' unearned income over, I think it's $21,000 for 2018, is now taxed at trust and estate rates. Trust and estate rates jump very quickly. I think it's, I'm right here, but I think it's like at $10,000 they jump to 24%, and then right around $12,000 they jump to 35%. So trust and estate rates jump very quickly, and kids' income over $2,100 will now be taxed at those rates. The question of how the IRS is going to implement it is whether kids with income under $2,100, if that'll be fine, just treating it how we always have on the parents' return. And then the second question is, over $2,100, is it going to be a whole separate tax return? Are they going to have to file a trust or estate tax return, or will there still be some form similar to the 8814 that we have now where you report your children's unearned income? But if the PFD stays under $2,100, most people, it won't affect them. But people who have kids who have the PFD plus maybe some dividends from a native corporation, or maybe, you know, investment income somewhere else, they might have to file a whole separate tax return for their kids, unfortunately. So,
and George, so if I've got any other income going in with that PFD, I'm waiting to get some instructions from the IRS on how to deal with this.
Yeah, there's not. She's absolutely right. Although the one thing, Evelyn, is that the trust rates are 12.5% and they're 39.5%. They're higher than the individual rates for the top player. I mean, this is they did not change that. I mean, it's absolutely draconian for kids. So I don't know what they're. I have no idea what they're thinking.
I'm sure the IRS will figure out what Congress intended to do, not what they wrote.
So.
We've got about a minute and a half left, but let's take Keith from Anchorage. Keith, you have a question about the Affordable Care Act and the tax on Cadillac plans, the high-cost, high-quality insurance plans.
Yeah, I appreciate you doing the program, real good program. My wife and I are retired, and we filed jointly. And as a part of our retirement, our premium for our health care insurance is paid. In Alaska, that's a pretty big issue because our health care is so high, right. And we both receive the benefit. So is that still in place, or does the new tax law affect that? And then maybe you can explain how it's going to be implemented, because it hasn't. I think it's supposed to be implemented 2018.
Yeah. George, we got about 40 seconds left, so let me ask Evelina, George, in the 30, 40 seconds we got left, is that going to change? Are people going to start paying tax?
I haven't seen anything about that.
The Cadillac tax is really a tax at the employer level, not at the individual level. So that's been pushed and pushed and pushed. But if it ever comes into effect, it's going to be the employer, or the state of Alaska in this case, is going to have to pay. It's basically an excise tax to the employer giving too much benefit to an employee, not the employee. The employee isn't going to, but the pushback would be to try to reduce that, you know, that benefit down.
Okay. So, well, thank you. That's all we have time for today on Talk of Alaska. I'd like to thank my guests, George Elgee from Elgee Rehfeld Mertz in Juneau and Evelina Kerr from the Anchorage firm of Balanced CPAs. Our engineer today is Dave Waldron. And next week's Talk of Alaska, January 23rd, will be on Alaska's struggling nonprofits. Thank you.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.